Hello, you are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, and this is a very special episode. I am without my co-host today. This is Shireen Gourbani coming at you from the left, but really just here on a very exciting and we're hoping informational program today with our state's budget director, Sophia DeCaro. She's been with us before, but Sophia, thank you for joining us again. Tell us your title. Tell us about the department, the work that you lead.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here. As you know, I'm a big fan of the show. So I am excited to be a guest here today. Sophia DeCaro with the Governor's Office of Planning and Budget. I'm the executive director there. And of course, that's the executive branch financial office for the state. So super excited to be here today.
To talk numbers.
Talk about process and talk about what we've proposed.
Yeah. So as the process works, and I think, so we're in the legislative session now, and I think a lot of folks, if you're on my side of things, I think a lot of folks in general are often, our attention is pulled by anti-trans bills, you know, this kind of like splashy, I would say highly political bills that move through our legislature, but really the core function of the legislature is to approve this budget, is to approve a budget, right? So much work goes into this from the governor's side, putting together an agenda, putting together a vision for this state. And you are really the person who's pulling together all of these different departments. So just at a high level, I think our listeners are super engaged and understand, but we have the legislative branch, we have the executive branch, that's our governor, and then we have the judicial, which is catching some heat in this session. But underneath that, we're talking about areas in the executive branch, in our budget, looking at things like agriculture and food, alcohol beverage services, the Board of Higher Education, commerce, corrections, cultural and community engagement, government operations, National Guard, Labor Commission, Public Service Commission. So these are huge portions of our, I would say we don't often think about the way that our daily lives interact with them, but our daily lives touch these areas. What is the size of our budget, just dollar-wise? And can you start to talk to me about how these individual areas build up into the budget?
Absolutely. So it's a $30.7 billion budget
and
this year.
Just, that's a B.
That is a B.
Billion.
Billion. That is $30.7 billion. Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. And I think you shed light on a little bit of nuance here in terms of the different branches of government. Legislature has really two main jobs. It's to enact laws and to pass a budget, to put a budget in place. That's their two main constitutional roles. So one might ask, well, why does the governor have a budget proposed? And that is because it is our job, and that is laid out in statute as well, to propose a budget to the legislature. And then that then starts the process. And, you know, some technical explanation behind that is a lot of states, because of the size of budgets and the work involved, does what's called incremental budgeting. And Utah budgets that way as well. So we have what's a base budget, what's called a base budget that goes forward. There's a process to evaluate that budget. That's a different process. But then you have the incremental pieces, which are budget requests, when that agency comes forward. It could be reductions or additions, but it's the incremental changes of the base that ends up getting talked about through a lot of the legislative cycle. And so I want to point out that difference because There's a lot of work involved in not only evaluating the base that's done on the side, but a lot of this work is trying to evaluate, well, should we add more for certain XYZs, or should we, you know, make some adjustments and reallocate from there?
Yeah. So when you're thinking, when does this process start? So that needs to be done and ready to come forward at the beginning of our legislative session. When does the process start?
Yeah, good question. So the process of evaluating the base is happening year round. We have a team dedicated to doing that. It's our results management team. And their job is to drive the best investment of use of existing resources that the legislature's already put in motion. We have processes in place where we work collaboratively with the legislative fiscal analyst office, where we're trying to figure out how to do better with what we have, how to make things more efficient. So that work is going on regularly. on the side on an ongoing basis.
Yeah.
In terms of the requests, budget requests.
New things or changes.
That's yeah. right. We issue out budget guidance in June. And of course, we have a team of economists. We're evaluating what the revenue looks like on a quarterly basis. We're looking at how much revenue is coming into the state. And then on a monthly basis, we're monitoring all the economic indicators that give us insight onto, you know, how much we think that may change based on what's happening in the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So we're regularly monitoring the revenue side, and we issue out guidance to all requesters in June saying, okay, you know, we're thinking this is going to be an economic cycle where we're going to have to, you know, be cautious. So we set the tone for that, and then we indicate, you know, how to make a budget request.
Yeah.
And then by statute, all agencies, and that's not only agencies that report to the governor, but it's all constitutional offices, it's higher ed, public ed, even nonprofits who might be interested in asking for money, they work through agencies. We give them the timeline. They get their guidance in June. We usually have a due date in the beginning of September to submit those requests. And then our analysts, we have a team of analysts that goes through every single budget request. And we had more than 400 requests this year where we were just sifting through all of the nitty-gritty details, doing the analysis for every single request. That then gets into building a recommendation. We meet regularly with all the cabinet members. We get together with the lieutenant governor, scrub through one more time.
Yeah.
And from there, we work with the governor. And, you know, he provides input in this budget as well. So it is getting a high level of scrutiny. Every
yeah.
recommendation is getting a high level of scrutiny. And then in the fall, we have a better idea of what revenue changes might be. And then we have literally a 2 to 3 week period to actually build a budget.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And a lot of work goes into
yeah.
it.
That sounds like a lot of late nights.
A lot of late nights.
I'm responsible for about a $15 million budget. We take a lot longer than that to put it together. But I see what you're saying. There are many, many steps along the way, many inputs. And I just want to clarify for folks, too, when you say constitutional offices, there we're talking about like the auditor's office, correct?
That's
like different
right.
divisions mm-hmm. of our, I guess, of the executive branch,
independently
right?
elected
independently.
Executive branch.
Yeah. How many people are in your office? How many people are working with you as this process is being shepherded through year after year?
Yeah. So we're a small office, if you can believe. We're doing all of this work, again, on the side, evaluating the base, but also evaluating all these requests and monitoring revenue. We're doing that with a team of about 30 people.
Yeah. Do you find it's getting easier? Is it getting harder? Because this is now what year for you?
Well, let's see. I'm going into, I guess, year five or six. Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
I was going to say that, too.
2021.
You've been at it for a
yes,
bit.
Yes, yes.
Do you find it's getting easier? Or yeah, I'm not going to ask you to speak to the politics of the moment, but the political backdrop that we're in is certainly creating market uncertainty. So when we're thinking about everything from tariffs to the valuation of the dollar, I'm wondering if you find there are elements of the job that have gotten more complex.
Absolutely, when it comes to anticipating what is happening on the federal side,
yeah.
because that absolutely gets integrated into what we're doing with the budget.
Yeah.
That has been very challenging, just knowing what to anticipate, and a lot of uncertainty has come our way with that. We're really proud, actually, that we've got processes in place like contingency planning and things like that, where the legislature has actually been very proactive in mitigating that kind of risk.
Yeah.
But we were on a daily basis for a hot minute there, evaluating
yeah.
all the risk and uncertainty and trying to determine what will happen so that we know how to position ourselves so that we can respond to situations where, you know, we may not have what we think we're going to have
right.
going forward.
Right. And I'm guessing now that I'm thinking about the timeline you've been doing this, certainly in the beginning years, that's kind of peak COVID, like sort of moving out of COVID, a lot of extra dollars coming into the state from, you know, COVID funding in a number of different ways. I just saw today that there's a nutrition program that looks like Utah is not going to sustain going forward. It's a summer program for kids. And my understanding is, of course, while I'm deeply bothered by that, it is, as a person who has sat on a county council and has had to review and approve a budget, that's a $13 million program that now the federal government is no longer funding. So the state is saying we don't have an additional $13 million sitting around to run this program. I'm not going to argue with you about that, but I would certainly, you know, I'm concerned about things like that. But I also understand what it's like to suddenly have a pile of an unfunded mandates show up on your desk, whether that's in our education system, programs for persons with disabilities, thinking about food nutrition programs. Honestly, what's happening with Medicaid, right? Like all of these have to be stressful as you're working to put together a vision for the kind of state that we want to live in, which I think we share a lot of values around that. And also, again, planning for that uncertainty. So how do those conversations, how do you engage the legislative leadership as you're sort of wading through this uncertainty?
Mm-hmm. Well, so, you know, again, with every request that we review, we are vetting from a variety of criteria. One of them is like, what is the proper role of the state in funding X, Y, or Z? What is the proper role of the state? Should the share, and what's the proper share that the state should take on? Rarely is it 100%, you know, in cases where, you know, we get a lot of requests from even nonprofits and things like that, but a lot of the agencies are constrained with resources as well.
Yeah.
So we're always evaluating that. And that's one of the things we have to look at, too, is what is the role? And, you know, is this solely a federal program or is this a state driven program?
Yeah.
And is this a policy call or not? And one that we want to make in terms of a recommendation. If they are policy calls, we do try to work collaboratively to, you know, we have to look at what's realistic too in this environment and try to work as collaboratively as we can. And where can we move the needle as a state to try to solve for long range issues and try to overcome these short term challenges, but maximize the best way we can. And I feel like we did that effectively with the COVID dollars that came into the state, where we were able to solve for some of the things and challenges we had, like water infrastructure and things like that. And so we always look for opportunities to do that, too, with a long range view.
Yeah.
We even have a senior advisor to the governor on long range planning.
Yes.
And that is super helpful because we budget on a 2-year window.
Yeah.
So we need to think long term. What are the needs long term that we have in front of us that we can chip away at as we go into the future and stay strong? And sometimes that means we have to live without stuff.
Some things. Yeah. Well, you are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm so excited for us to continue to take a deep dive into the budget with Sophia DiCaro, and we will be right back.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on UPR. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. That's BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
This is Shireen Gourbani, and you're listening to a special episode of Both Sides of the Aisle, where we are diving deep into the governor's budget with Sophia DiCaro. Sophia, tell us a little bit about what, now we've heard about the process, what's in this budget?
Yes, thank you. So we are proud of the budget that was proposed. And again, the governor and lieutenant governor weighed heavily into this budget. And this is one that is a fiscal responsible budget. So there's not a whole lot of Christmas tree ornaments in this budget.
Not a bunch of new stuff.
What it is doing what we're not doing so that we can be strong in the future.
Yeah.
As you know, there were implications to our budget from the HR1, the federal HR1, also known as the Big Beautiful Act, that impacted the current year that we're in to the tune of about $300 million. So we had to solve for a $300 million gap that we thought we were going to have that we didn't end up having, which we were able to do. The next fiscal year that we're budgeting for, fiscal year 27, is another $200 million. So altogether, it's a $500 million that we are trying to, you know, overcome and get through. Now, over time into the future, that's going to get less and less and less. And then you know, the growth will go into the future and absorb that impact. So we're really trying to get through the year we're in the most responsible way possible.
Yeah.
And so we proposed a budget that includes no new executive branch FTE funded with state dollars. And that's a pretty big deal because, you know, there's just a growing pains that come with, especially when you have like inflationary pressures and things like that. So we took the approach of plugging every gap where we could, where there were things that maybe are, you know, were funded with one-time money each year, things like the indigent defense, things that are just ongoing needs that really should be plugged first before adding anything new, things where we're trying to innovate and scale and do things that way. And so we didn't add any new FTE with state funds. And we took the approach of addressing inflationary pressures, but we, you know, wanted to keep our workforce strong because I like to say, you know, if you don't fund employee comp, it's a lot like a pothole where if you don't fund that pothole as you go, it gets more expensive when it does come time to fund it. So you've got to keep, you know, funding your cost of living adjustments and things like that, or it ends up being more expensive and creates a lot of structural issues later. So we took this responsible approach that way.
And we do want talented people working for our state.
We do, especially
pay for them.
That is right. And because we're doing more with fewer people as well. So, you know, our state's grown, what, 45% since I think 2004, I want to say. But our state employee, the number of state employees have only grown like 7% in that same period of time. So we are more efficient with fewer people. So we need to take care of what we have. And we see our people as like our, you know, partners in executing a strong deliverable for the people who are paying for it, citizens who are paying for the services.
That's right. This is so interesting. You just mentioned indigent defense. And if folks are trying to remember what that is, I do believe when we had Representative Grant Miller and Representative Tyler Clancy on the episode over the holidays, we did talk a little bit about that program. So you could go back and learn, and we could also do another episode if people want to learn more. It's really critically important work that happens in our state. But that aside, I guess what I want to do is say what I learned knocking on doors was it was so interesting how the very first time I did it, I was running for federal office and I'd be like, hi, I'm here. I believe that people should have health care. You know, what do you think? And so many people would stop me and they'd be like, there needs to be a stop sign here. Like the things that are right in front of them. And I know the state doesn't, well, it's trying to in some cases figure out where stop signs go, it seems like. But the way that the state impacts people's lives, I'm thinking about even things like the Department of Health and Human Services. We're thinking about things like STI testing and treatment. If you can't get that at all in our state, right? Like that's not to the benefit of Utahns. We need to have these programs funded. We want people to be skilled. We want people who are tracking disease, who are looking at what's happening with everything from the way that our large scale health systems work in the state, Medicaid, for example. We want talented people in these roles. We want people to have a good experience when they come in. We want to be modern and we want to be efficient. And so I'm glad to hear that there's maybe some focus on that, making sure we've got good people in these roles.
Amen. Yeah. I mean, we like to take care of what we have. Yeah. And I think we do that in a prudent way, and including how we manage our budget, and which is why we were able to absorb the impact we did. There's some states out there that had to decouple from what was happening on the federal side because they couldn't afford to take that impact to their budget. We're not one of those states.
Yeah.
And we're very proud of that. And so, you know, we've put forward something we think is great and also helping to take care of the next generation and forward thinking as well. And again, this is a proposal and we know that as well.
Yeah.
And very much respect the separation of powers there and also acknowledge it is the legislature's responsibility to appropriate. So these are recommendations, but we hope to work collaboratively with the legislature on these efforts.
And I want to hear about some of the, you know, I want to hear about the recommendations. What some of the things that you're excited about that you want people to be excited about. I also just want to say to people, Sophia handed me a big book with a budget and I can't wait to read it. So I know that one of the things under your leadership that's happened is a lot more, I would say, user-friendly information on the website. So people can go and they can engage with this. But what I was going to bring up is I feel like now it's a couple months ago and I feel like Natalie would back me up on this, but looking at a map of the United States, about half of the states were reporting that they were in a recession. Utah was not one of those states. And is that, I know times are tight, but would you agree that we're not in a full-on recession in the way that we're seeing in other states?
I would say we're in soft growth mode. Yeah. I was around during the Great Recession, and we're nowhere near where we were there.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we're still in the green, although it's slower than we'd probably like it to be. However, there's still a lot of uncertainty that could change that quickly. Yeah. And we're very cognizant of that, which is why we're super cautious in our approach.
So tell me about what some of the things that you're excited about in here.
Yeah. So I know the governor wants to go big on also continuing the investments laid out in prior years where we're trying to do some things on homelessness, for example, and mitigation on those issues there. And housing is a huge thing. Water management, things like the Great Salt Lake. So you're going to see investments in there. The key is that these are investments that we have been working on, and we want people to remember. Again, I mentioned earlier, we budget on an incremental basis. Some people are like, what? There's only a couple million here and there. Well, don't forget, that's a couple of million on top of the multi-millions already in motion for those respective things. So there's a lot in play where we're implementing right now and doing things on the, for example, Great Salt Lake. There's an additional $5 million we recommended there on top of, the 87 plus that's in motion, and $1 billion in conservation for water in general over the last few years. And so there's recommendations there. Housing, we're launching a housing strategic plan to work on. A lot of those are policy driven that don't necessarily require money, but require, policy changes. So there's a voice in there in this budget proposal. Literacy is a huge, huge initiative right now that the governor's very vocal on. We've got to get our third graders reading better.
Yes.
Third graders and eighth graders are below 50% of proficiency, which, if the studies show that if you're not reading, proficiently by the eighth grade, that there's impacts from there. So we're trying to reverse those. So there's investments being recommended for that. And then the governor's been very strong in leading out on the impacts caused by social media and the different harms associated with that. So there's some things in the works right now. I know the legislature is taking a leadership role on that as well to effectuate change and mitigate harm in that respect.
Yeah. So I'm of course excited to hear about all of those, housing in particular. And I do think that's clearly tied right into the issue of homelessness, and that if we can start to create more opportunities for folks to move into something stable over the long term. Just really quickly, I know that's the Office of Budget and Planning. When you think out on the horizon, what are like maybe one or two things that you would like to orient people towards? I know you mentioned the Great Salt Lake. Is there anything else that's kind of out there in that space that you would just say, this is a priority and it's something that we're really thinking about over what makes Utah strong in the future?
Yeah, housing is a huge challenge, and we all know that. And we know even our legislature has a list of the risk areas to the state. And we have a plan on all of those identified risk areas. We are on it like Blue Bonnet. We are working toward ways to mitigate those risks and what resources need to be shifted toward those risks. Housing is huge. That's one of them. And so you'll see a lot of bills this session related to that, a lot of effort there. And some of it is innovation and trying new things and figuring out what will work, what won't work. Yeah. But there's a lot of folks working on what can we do there? Because if you can't have people, staying here. Our young workforce is one of the greatest attributes we have as a state.
Yes.
And we don't want to lose that. We're doing really well compared to the nation right now. But as you know, our fertility rates are declining as a nation.
Yep.
Utah is among that, even though we're a young state.
Yep.
We are going to be feeling that too, which is why, in the past we proposed a whole focus on aging population, because we know we're aging. We need to prepare for the future that we're going to have. And there's certain things we know. Housing's one of them. Aging population's another one. Water, the water issues that we're going through is also another one.
So as I know you've done so much work to try to make this digestible, accessible, where can people go to learn about the budget proposal? And then if they like it, if there are things they like, what do you suggest they do?
This is great. And I just want everyone to know that I did hand Shireen a hard copy. And she said she would read it. And it made my heart warm and fuzzy. And I love that because I think she will actually read it. So thank you for that. It's on our website at gopb.utah.gov. You can download it there and see what is being recommended. I encourage everyone to take a look. Really appreciate the feedback that the data is more accessible. We have a lot of wonky data, and we try to really make it digestible to the broader population. Yeah. So we encourage you to take a look and get involved. We are in the middle of a legislative session right now. We're actually involved in the appropriations process as well. And now is the time to engage and share your priorities with your lawmakers. They will listen to you. If you reach out to your elected official, let them know what's important to you. Share your feedback. Follow along. Everything is, posted publicly. You can listen to the hearings online. You can even testify to bills and certain things that are important to you. You can testify transparently. Mm-hmm. And I just encourage everyone to be part of the process, even if it's just trying it out for the first time. Pick one issue that you care about and try to follow it, and pick one budget item and try to follow it through the whole session. It's kind of a fun exercise.
It sure is. Well, Sophia, thank you so much for coming back and talking about the budget. You heard it here. Reach out to your legislators, let them know what your priorities are, and thank you for being a listener to Both Sides of the Aisle.